Hello and welcome. I'm Siobhan Sarna. This is Petunia the Cat. We have a very special guest, Dr. Geraldo Magarinos. And he's coming in today hot and live from France. And although that's not his usual location, we really appreciate him being up very late with us today. We're going to be talking about the other microbiome. Now, of course, we have multiple microbiomes all over our body, but one of the most neglected or not thought about or talked about as much as certainly the gut microbiome is the oral microbiome. For those of you who are familiar with my work, you know I'm very passionate about things that are not talked about enough in medicine these days. I am not anti-doctor whatsoever. I'm totally pro health. And I love people that stay in touch with the research, which is exponentially exploding all over the place, which is so exciting. But what I want to do is connect the dots for you with the doctor today about how your tube of the mouth all the way down through the entire body is connected. I want you to keep your teeth for as long as possible. I want you to have the healthiest gut. A lot of things will come into place once all that is pulled together. And my special guest is actually here today representing Microbiome Labs as well. So usually we have Kieran Krishnan joining us from Microbiome Labs, but he will still will get credit as being co-founder. He's going off and doing some other projects with hormone testing and the Dutch test, and we'll get him back into the rotation ASAP. But when he was transitioning over to not being with Microbiome Labs, right, it was all good is what I'm trying to say. He suggested that I speak with Geraldo about oral microbiome because Kieran Krishnan and I are also obsessed with this topic. So that being said, there's a little backstory on it. Dr. Magarinos, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Ah, what a pleasure. So we are going to talk about it, and we're going to have you share your screen, and everybody's going to get the replay. We also do have that 15% off for your entire cart from Microbiome Labs, which is super, super cool, and definitely don't know how much longer that's going to happen, but take advantage of it while you can. We're going to talk about that, but the primary focus of this conversation and presentation is the oral microbiome. I'm going to let you take over and share your screen, and I will just come back when needed. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Let's start. Hello, everyone. My name is Geraldo Magarinos. I'm a formerly trained dentist, periodontist, and oral surgeon, and I've been dedicating a big amount of my life to the study of the microbiome. And all this started with the big question, is the oral microbiome and the oral cavity connected to the rest of the body? And that was probably my initial driver to understand the microbiome overall. And over the years, I got very into the gut microbiome, but I never stopped asking what was going on with the oral microbiome, how they were talking together, if there was any relationship. And to be honest, at first it was very hard to find evidence and information useful to prove this point. I'm so excited that right now we have tremendous amount of evidence, way more than the time that I started this, and we can start connecting the dots in way more detail. Analysis, and we can actually start figuring out the root cause of the oral disease and also triggers for gut microbiome imbalances. So I'm going to try to give you a brief overall view of what are these major connective points between these two ecosystems and what you can do at the end for trying to improve the status of these two microbiomes, which are highly important for overall health. So generally speaking, let me move here. My camera was in the way. Generally speaking, the oral microbiome is the second most complex ecosystem we have in the body. And it has around 700 species of bacteria. We have some of them recognized and we have them already identified. There's a big amount of them, 35% approximately, that we don't even know who they are. So we're still researching about this huge microbiome. But we start seeing that there's a certain degree of connection and interaction between the mouth and the gut. and other areas of the body. So definitely there is a very, very interesting field here for research. And we have different types of niches. This is what makes the oral microbiome so complex, because it is a fairly small cavity, but very open and also very specific in different in providing different types of ecological niches, which will grow different types of microbes that they are different between each other. They're very specific to the area they colonize, and they provide different types of functions, different types of protective mechanisms to keep homeostasis and balance in that area of the body. So it's very important to understand that this is not an easy area for analyzing at all. And I think that's one of the main issues that has been delaying the process of research over the years. This is the initial point for digestion and how important that is. So definitely we want to have this in a healthy status, because this is the part that starts the process of digestion that will nourish the entire rest of the body, and also, of course, our microbiome, and with all the things that we can produce and we provide to our body from that standpoint. So this is crucial. This is one of the main points for human health. So basically in the composition, we can see we have different types of microbes. We have, I don't know why this got erased, but we have different types of phylums of bacteria. We have archaeas, we have protozoas, we have viruses all together forming the composition of the mouth microbiome. And there's certain similarities between the oral microbiome and the gut microbiome. We have a 45% overlap in the composition between the mouth microbiome and the gut microbiome. So we know there's a symbiotic relationship in terms of the composition. And that might apply also, we're still researching about it, but might apply also about the fungi, the viruses, the archaeas, and the protozoas that live in the oral cavity. We swallow saliva all the time. Every time we swallow, we are gonna bring microbes from the mouth cavity into the gut. They're supposed to get control. We're gonna talk about that later. But imagine how much you swallow per day, how many bacteria you're bringing in on a daily basis, and therefore the connection you're creating between the mouth and the gut microbiome overall. So the interesting part that got my attention actually in the beginning of my studies with the oral microbiome, that was that the oral microbiome is highly exposed to environmental factors. Every time we open the mouth, of course, we are bringing things in from the environment. So my first hypothesis was, I don't think this is a very stable ecosystem. And actually it is. It's a highly stable ecosystem. And the reason why, I will mention that in a minute, but there was a reason why this ecological ecosystem, it's not changing as much as I thought and many people thought. From the environmental exposures, is actually quite resilient in healthy states. And it provides a lot of stability, which is required for the main functions that this area provides to the rest of the body. We get the microbiome from the mouth from intrauterine colonization. We know that the amniotic fluid brings the initial oral microorganisms during pregnancy. And we know that in natural delivery, the baby comes in contact with the microflora from the vaginal tract. Therefore, we get the first initial colonizers, and they're going to start the process that will create the further colonization of the gut. These guys in the mouth, they start the fermentation process in the beginning that will create the anaerobiosis and all the other conditions that will set the types of microbes that we're going to get colonizing the gut. That's huge, because if you don't have the proper colonization of the mouth at the beginning, you might alter the colonization in the future of your gut, which of course will change everything else in your gut function. Now, how important is our early development of the mouth microbiome, where there's research, for example, done in parents that were cleaning the pacifiers by sucking that, and which I know it seems like horrible how you're sucking the pacifier for cleaning the pacifier of your child, but actually it's a very common practice. And other parents were just sterilizing or boiling it or doing other types of techniques for cleaning the pacifier. And what this research found was that the parents were actually sucking the pacifier for cleansing purposes, and then bringing the pacifier back to their child, reduced in their child the probability for getting some allergic reactions, including conditions like asthma and eczema. Meaning that the translocation of microbes from parents to their child actually is relevant for the healthy development of the immune system. So the oral microbiome doesn't stop developing by the transit through the vaginal tract, actually keeps the process going, and we get a lot of the microbes we need and the information we need for a healthy interaction with the immune system by translocating and bringing microbes from our parents. So this is part of the colonization process that I want to bring in as an awareness from understanding how we develop a healthy mouth microbiome. Another thing that we know for many years already is that there are certain molecules that are produced in the mouth microbiome, and one of them that are crucial for being healthy, and one of them is nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is very interesting because we know that nitric oxide is very important for many, many pathways, metabolic pathways of the body, including the cardiovascular system. And it's coming from the degradation of nitrates that we can find in different types of foods. But these nitrates, actually, they don't arrive directly to the mouth so the oral bacteria can process them. They actually travel from the stomach and they get absorbed through the enteric circulation and they get back to the blood where they are flushed by the salivary glands back into the mouth, and that's how the oral bacteria can grab them and produce the nitric oxide that we need for being healthy. So that got me one question right away when I saw this schematic and we understood that the nitrates were not really directly involved. They were not directly delivered in the oral microbiome ecosystem, that they were traveling from the GI tract and back into the salivary glands, and then they were flushed in the oral cavity. That brought my attention, thinking, well, if this happens for nitrates, what else can travel back from the GI digestion, from the intestinal absorption, back into the mouth? And that got me into a very interesting piece of knowledge that I will share with you in a few minutes. But for understanding that, we need to understand the role of saliva in the oral microbiome. And the saliva is one of the most important factors that will affect the bacterial communities. And we know that the role of saliva has been described multiple times as the nutrient source for the microbiome. And remember when I was telling you about how the microbiome of the mouth remains stable, even though this is an open cavity, is because there's a stable flow of nutrients that is coming from the salivary glands and the crevicular fluid, which is the fluid that comes in between your teeth and the gingival tissue, your gums. Those fluids, they carry the nutrients needed for nourishing your oral microbiome. Therefore, they create the stability in the patterns of the colonization of your mouth microbiome, and also provide the nutrients needed for everything else you do in your mouth microbiome. So we rely on a good amount of nutrients, and the nutrient uptake in the the intestinal tract, and the passage of these nutrients back to the enteric circulation and into the salivary glands for creating a stable and healthy mouth microbiome. We are recirculating nutrients. They're already pre-digested, and they come in a pre-digested form into the mouth microbiome. That also affects the way we see the pathogenesis of multiple conditions in the mouth. So we're going to talk about that. And of course, very important, saliva also provides antimicrobial peptides, lysozymes, and antibodies that will, of course, improve the immune function, controlling the populations of microbes in the mouth microbiome. But the interesting part is that the mouth microbiome, even though we have the presence of these immune molecules, remains stable in healthy conditions. So it resists the activity of these type of molecules. And there's multiple research proving this point. We have this one, for example, regarding vitamin A, B12, vitamin D binding proteins found in salivary samples, and how they provide these type of nutrients for the oral microbiome. There's also research talking about the crosstalk between diet and the oral microbiome, how we create a healthy microbiome or can trigger inflammation and abnormal immune system responses during certain type of known pathologies, like, for example, periodontitis. We know that diet plays a huge role in controlling the currents and also the progression of these type of pathological conditions. So overall, we know that the main source of nutrition for the oral microorganisms is the saliva and the crevicular fluid, not these reminiscences or little pieces of food that they get attached in the mouth, in between our teeth, that of course they can trigger local inflammatory processes, or they can create abnormalities in the mouth microbiome, but they don't explain in full how you create a chronic pathological condition like tooth decay or periodontitis. So the reason why is because there's an alteration in the microbiome and in the flow of nutrients coming from the intestinal absorption. And that's one of the main points that we connect the healthy microbiome with the status in the mouth, with the status of the microbiome of the gut. Now, another nutrient that I think is worth a few minutes to talk about in specific is the role of D3 and K2 in the oral health, because they play a fundamental role in the formation of all the hard tissues. I'm talking about B3, including all the enamel, dentin, and the supporting bone of these structures. And also we know that plays a huge role in the immunity that is needed for preventing the initiation on the progression of periodontal disease and other type of microbial derived conditions. And we know that from the beginning of our teeth formation, vitamin D plays a huge role in the development of the jawbone and the tooth structures. And we know there's a direct correlation between low levels of D vitamin systemically and the progression or the incidence and of tooth decay and periodontitis. So it's a very important nutrient we need to take care of. And we know that when we start supplementing with a good quality vitamin D, actually we can reverse or stop or at least ameliorate the severity of the periodontal disease in the mouth. And K2 is amazing in the way that controls the fluids inside the tooth structure, because there's a centrifugal fluid flow that is occurring inside your tooth. And if that gets altered, the calcification process gets affected, and the master controlling agent for that centrifugal flow is vitamin K2. So if you have deficiency in vitamin K2, that centrifugal flow will stop, or it could be even reversed. So you stop grabbing minerals, or even worse, you start pushing minerals out from the tooth structure into the mouth cavity. There will be the initiation of a decalcification process that can explain at least partially the progression of tooth decay and decalcification in the tooth structure overall. So definitely a very important factor for keeping the mouth healthy. And the vitamin K2 is usually heavily deficient in the standard American diets. That's why in many cases, supplementation with vitamin K2 becomes a very, very important feature in our nutrition. Now, I've been throwing pieces about the oral gut microbiome connection. So you already are, you can figure out a couple of things that are, they can be connecting these two ecosystems, but I will try to now to give you the overall picture of how these two environments connect to each other. And one of the most important parts, how they can increase prevalence or risk factors for certain diseases to occur. In the case of the oral microbiome, we know that the oral microbiome has a huge connection with the initiation and progression of a lot of systemic conditions, not only limited to the mouth. Of course, periodontitis and tooth decay are the obvious ones. We know them. They're pretty famous. And actually, tooth decay is the most prevalent disease, chronic disease in the world, followed by gingivitis, which is the second most prevalent one. To the point that some people are postulating that maybe gingivitis is a normal condition in the mouth because it's so prevalent. But we know that there's a certain degree of normal inflammatory responses, and that beyond that point, we can call that inflammation in the gums gingivitis, and it's not normal. But also we have other implications. We know that Alzheimer's disease, we know that cardiovascular disease, we know that cystic fibrosis, esophageal cancer, colorectal cancer, prostatic cancer, diabetes, and rheumatoid arthritis, along with other autoimmune conditions, they are triggered by the presence of oral microbes in the gut. Now, I told you earlier, we swallow a lot of bacteria every day. Therefore, we can think, well, how this happens if we're bringing bacteria all the time from the mouth into the gut? Yes, to a certain level, that translocation is healthy because we're creating a potential challenge and we're bringing information in form of bacteria from the mouth into the gut. And actually that also helps modulating proper immune responses and understanding what's going on outside. This is the entry point of the outside of the body. Therefore, every microbe that comes in and we bring in the gut where we hold the major piece of our immune system will get analyzed, and therefore we're going to be triggering the proper immune responses to have a healthy interaction with our environment. But if we have digestive imbalances, being abnormal colonization in the gut microbiome, if we have low production of bile, which is huge, as you probably heard a lot of times in SIBO, if you have low stomach acid production, all of those factors will influence the way we control the entry of the mouth microbes into the gut microbiome. And that can trigger abnormal compositions, abnormal colonization pathways in the gut, and triggering immune reactions that will derive into these systemic conditions, some of them very complicated ones. So
that is so huge. I need to just break in and say, so you're saying the bile
yes,
is related to all of this?
Well, bile acids they play two roles. They're one of the major antimicrobials we have in the digestive system, and also is one of the most potent buffer agent. That's a pH of 11. So it controls the conditions in the gut in terms of the pH, which we know most of the microbes are very sensitive to, and also has a huge antimicrobial potential, regulating the colonization patterns, especially in the small bowel. But it can create a ripple effect.
Huge, huge, huge. I've never actually heard someone make that connection to the mouth. So thank you for that. That's really illuminating. And all the more motivation for the liver gallbladder rescue summit that I just did, but all the more motivation to get all of that bile and liver and gallbladder functioning properly. So peace. Thank
you. Oh, of course. And one more tip about that. Some of the major amounts of the receptors for bitter taste, which they're huge for stimulating the gallbladder function and the liver function, they're located in the mouth. So if you don't chew things or taste things with bitter taste, you might neglect that pathway and therefore the activation of those two organs, which are crucial for a healthy microbiome balance. But this is one of the main pieces. Now, these statements in terms of the relationship between the mouth microbes getting translocated into the gut, that can happen with or without a healthy microbiome in the mouth to begin. And if it's an imbalanced mouth microbiome, if we have a dysbiotic mouth microbiome, that's going to get even worse, because the patterns of the colonization in the oral microbiome when it becomes dysbiotic, they're way more immune reactive. Now, imagine how we can get this more dysbiosis in the mouth. Well, one of the main factors is malnourishing your mouth microbiome. And we know the nutrients for the mouth microbiome, they're coming from the gut. So now we start connecting back and forth all these thoughts. We know that we need proper absorption of nutrients. We need a normal functioning in the GI tract for bringing the nutrients back into the salivary glands and nourishing your mouth microbiome. That's how you keep a healthy mouth microbiome. If you start getting abnormal absorption, then you start starving your mouth microbes. And we know that will derive into abnormal patterns of growth of the mouth microbes you have, and they will become more anaerobic or more pathogenic. And now you start swallowing those microbes instead. And then you trigger more dysbiosis, more inflammation back into your GI tract. There's also a way that we can trigger inflammation in the body. And of course, that also is related to the gut, by bringing the cytokines, the inflammatory molecules that are created locally in the mouth through the systemic circulation. So we can bring those immune molecules to other places in the body, and that can trigger inflammation in other places too. But we know that, and that can go with or along with the translocation of immune reactive bacteria that can trigger the previously named pathological conditions. So we can have two routes actually. We can either bring in the inflammatory molecules, or we can bring the actual bacteria that will trigger inflammation in other places in the body. And we make a lot of saliva, and we swallow, I told you before, a lot of saliva every day. And that brings a massive amount of microbes. And especially for inflammatory bowel disease, which is highly prevalent, there's a huge correlation between the oral microbes and the initiation and progression of IBD. It's stated that when we have a dysbiotic mouth related to periodontal disease, that can be a contributing risk factor for many inflammatory conditions, including IBD and IBS, and that microbes like Porphyromonas gingivalis and Fufusio bacterium nucleatum, which are classical bacteria related to the periodontal disease, they can start or aggravate the progression of IBD and trigger immune responses in multiple ways that will promote this inflammatory condition in the gut. This is, I took this from one of my multiple evaluations that I do with the biome effects testing. And in this report, you can see that there's an analysis of the at the phylum level of the microbiome. For this person in particular, we found a couple of elevated phylums which are known to be atypical, and one of them is Fusobacteria. So of course, we're looking at the phylum level, but it's probable, and I would recommend to check this more in detail with a biological dentist if I see this type of pattern, that if I see Fusobacteria elevated, I will be highly suspicious that this is actually coming from a dysbiotic mouth. And knowing how damaging Fusobacteria and high levels can become in the digestive tract, definitely is something that I will take with the highest priority. Now, also, we know that because we have an overlapping condition in the composition of the microbiome in the mouth and the gut, Firmicutes, Actinobacteria, and Proteobacteria being elevated in a gut microbiome sample, those can actually get elevated, not because we're growing more of them inside the gut, but because we're also translocating microbes related to those phylums from the mouth into the gut. And actually, when I see this pattern between different phylums elevated, and I know we're seeing these phylum elevations from bacteria, that we have a common translocation between the mouth, overlapping in the composition between the mouth and the gut microbiome, I start getting suspicious. I start believing, well, maybe there is a connection. Maybe this person is translocating microbes from the mouth into the gut and is actually bringing these microbes into the gut. And that can be a huge risk factor for building other systemic conditions. Maybe by seeing a gut microbiome analysis, I'm not saying this is a diagnosing tool, but at least you can dig deeper and maybe prevent the occurrence of a more complicated disease in the future. That for me is something I'm always looking for. And here, for example, on the family level, you see things like, well, the Fusobacteriaceae, which already we mentioned, but also things like Enterobacteriaceae, which are highly prevalent in this biotic mouth. But also we have certain microbes here like Ectorellaceae, which in high amounts, I'm also thinking this could be potentially coming from the mouth microbiome, because we know this is also participant in advanced stages of the periodontal disease. So if this person, let's say, is deficient in the production of stomach acid and also has a dysbiotic condition in the mouth, it's highly likely that every time he's swallowing bacteria from the mouth, is bringing this dysbiotic bacteria from the mouth into the gut. And we're going to see at least partially those bacteria represented in a gut microbiome analysis. So, well, this is already, I already mentioned this, the translocation effect from different types of microbes that can trigger IBD. And also there's translocation and findings of microbes from the mouth into the gut in people that were diagnosed with non-alcoholic fatty liver, and has been quite consistent to demonstrate that periodontal derived microbes can become a risk factor for creating non-alcoholic fatty liver. That's also huge. That means that there's a gut liver, there's a mouth liver gut axis where the periodontal microbes in the mouth can actually trigger imbalances in the functioning and the health status of our liver. And of course, that will affect at the same time the gut condition. So it's all connected. And we know that there's these microbes that we're seeing here, like Bayonella, Streptococcus, Privateles, which by the way, we can also see them in a standard gut microbiome analysis, are some of the ones that we recognize as triggering factors for or they're connected in a highly with a high level of prevalence between people that they have liver diseases and the presence of these microbes in the liver tissue that has been analyzed. The other one that is huge for bringing the same issue is Porphyromonas gingivalis, which is another one that we see very commonly in different types of systemic conditions. And cancer. Recent research has been showing that the oral microbes can greatly influence the tumor proliferation, invasion, and metastases. And this is coming from microbes that we recognize also as pathogenic in the mouth. And then, of course, by being translocated, there's a certain degree of correlation between tumor formation and even metastases and the presence of these microbes or their derived cytokines. So there's these two main pathways we use for triggering inflammatory conditions. Cardiovascular disease, another huge one. We know that all the cytokines, these interleukins we're mentioning here, especially interleukin 6, which is a huge one, can actually create damage in the endothelial tissue of the vascular system and therefore create atherosclerotic plaques. And that those interleukins can come from the immune responses created by an overgrowth of bacteria related to periodontal disease. So there's another thing that can be coming from the mouth that is affecting the cardiovascular system. And to finalize, Alzheimer's is another one that there has been over the years findings in correlating different types of microbes related to periodontitis and the cognition levels of people with Alzheimer's. And there's an increased severity in the cognition level damage and the amount of microbes or the severity of the progression of the periodontal disease in those people. So there are findings showing that periodontitis and Alzheimer's, they have a direct connection. And again, we have these two main pathways, even by the entry of microorganisms through the central nervous system, especially if we have a leaky brain problem mediated by lipopolysaccharides or by the cytokine response that we are creating through that localized inflammatory condition in the mouth. The gut alveolar bone axis, we know that also on the opposite direction, gut pathogens or lipopolysaccharides, especially from imbalanced populations of microbes in the gut, can travel to the mouth and they can trigger inflammation, damaging the supportive structures of the teeth in the mouth. And that can affect the alveolar bone, but not limited only to the alveolar bone, that also can affect the gums and can affect the periodontal tissues. We know that lipopolysaccharides can get translocated to different places in the body. And if they arrive into the periodontal tissues, they can trigger immune responses there that they can trigger damaging buildup in those tissues, reducing creating a permanent damage in the support of the tooth structure that is related, of course, to periodontitis. Now, as I mentioned, this will come from an endotoxemia problem in the first place and a leaky gut condition that is allowing those lipopolysaccharides to entry the circulatory system and get into the enteric circulation and travel through the body and arriving into the mouth as well. So we know that periodontal disease has a huge component that is coming from a dysbiotic gut. Therefore, periodontal disease can trigger inflammation in the gut, and inflammation in the gut can trigger periodontitis. We have a two-way connection between those type of conditions. So at this point, everyone will think, well, we have to do something about our oral hygiene, because apparently this is a huge deal for being healthy. The problem comes with the fact that oral hygiene is, first of all, quite complicated to be performed in an efficient way. And also, we don't want to damage the balance of the mouth microbiome. We want just to keep it in a healthy state. Now, most of the microbes we have in the mouth, they're not living isolated in a planktonic form. We have them integrated in oral biofilms. And I know these oral biofilms, they have been highly demonized, like, oh, these are bad, we need to take care of them. They're not. This is the fundamental structure of our bacteria in the mouth. So we want to keep them, but we want to keep them with a normal composition and in a healthy state, in a healthy amount. We don't want, of course, abnormal oral biofilms. We don't want pathogenic or aggressive types of biofilms. And definitely we don't want an overgrowth of biofilms that can alter the structures in the mouth and trigger immune reactions in an abnormal fashion. So these oral biofilms are amazing, but also they can get very complicated if we don't have a normal balance. Of course, these oral biofilms, they get nourished by the same things I mentioned before, by the recirculation of nutrients from the gut into the salivary glands. So one of the best ways for keeping these oral biofilms healthy and happy is by having a proper nutrition and also an efficient digestive system. And here's the conundrum, because we start cleaning the mouth too much and we start affecting the things that are supposed to be made in the mouth by oral microbes. In this case, we're analyzing the production of nitric oxide. And we can see that there's a correlation even with hospital mortality in people that are producing low levels of nitric oxide due to an impairment in the mouth microbiome created by the usage of antiseptic mouthwashes. So that's huge, because tell me who's going to the dentist and doesn't get recommendations for getting an antiseptic mouthwash used in a daily basis. And now we see here that there's actually health risk associated with a lowering in the production of certain metabolites that are needed for being healthy by using those antiseptic mouthwashes. So we need to be careful. Now, another one affecting L-arginine, which is also an essential amino acid that highly related to the production of nitric oxide. And it gets highly impaired by the usage of chlorhexidine, which is one of the most commonly used antiseptic agents in mouthwashes. So we start seeing that, unfortunately, damaging or affecting our microbes in a way that they will stop producing things that we need in the oral microbiome cavity can actually not be a good idea. So yes, we need to have an oral hygiene that is compatible with health. But also we need to be careful what are we doing and what we're using for keeping our mouth healthy. I know there's a lot of challenges in keeping a good oral hygiene routine. We know that there's, again, I mentioned this before, there's a high prevalence of gingivitis and tooth decay in the world, meaning that we have certain imbalances that can be contributing, can be coming also from localized factors, and therefore oral hygiene becomes highly relevant for preventing the occurrence of these conditions. But we know that most of the oral hygiene practices are quite inefficient in keeping a healthy oral cavity. So, and we have a huge array of tools like the brushing, toothpaste with detergents, and a lot of agents with antimicrobial potential. And we're not really achieving the health status in the mouth we're looking for. So something apparently is missing. And probably some angles in the way we're taking care of our health in the mouth are probably not done in the best way possible. And also we have huge problems in terms of the control of the biofilms, because the active ingredients in these formulations are actually not that effective. A lot of the effectiveness in that has been proven for the usage of these antimicrobial agents has been done in vitro, but in vivo, things change. So the effective rate of the usage of this type of antimicrobials drops dramatically when you start using them in the mouth in comparison with than when they are tested in vitro laboratory analysis. That's why there's something I want to show today that might become a really good tool for lowering biofilm growth and keeping a good pattern on the composition of the biofilms without using harsh elements and strong antimicrobials that can impair the normal functioning of the mouth bacteria, but also controlling the biofilm expression to normal levels. And this is a new product that comes from Microbiome Labs, that's BioFresh. And BioFresh is an enzymatic mouth cleansing lozenge that delivers a specific type of enzymes that they are able to control the patterns of growth of the biofilms without altering the expression in the production of certain metabolites, and also altering the healthy pattern of colonization of the mouth microbes we want to have in our oral cavity. So this solution will actually reduce the oral biofilm to healthy levels, but it will not disrupt the oral microbiome, which is the main concern by using all these other agents. And it's actually on the go, so it's pretty convenient. So it's like carrying your toothbrush. Same thing, even easier. It's just a tablet you put in the mouth and it will do the work for you. I'm not saying we can replace toothbrushing with this. I know that probably is something that people would get very excited about, but at least it will be a very good adjunctive therapy in conjunction with a normal toothbrushing technique. I will say that if we need to reduce or maybe stop using, because it has been proven that it's not as effective as the standard media will try to tell us, is the toothpaste. Toothpaste is really a detergent and it has more cosmetic applications than anything else, but it has not been proven to reduce in a healthy way oral biofilms. In comparison, this product, in the multiple research that has been done using different markers, it does actively reduce the buildup of biofilms using enzymes. So it will not disrupt the oral microbes directly, but it will regulate the expression of the biofilm in a healthy way. So that is actually pretty exciting. We have this available right now. Hello.
Hi. I know we were very excited when Kieran was talking to us about this too. He was like, we want to get rid of the toothbrush. So yes. I don't know how practical that totally is to your point, but they taste great. They're easy to chew. You get a lot for a little money and you do have that 15% off. Guys, I have a 9-minute hard out. So I just wanted to find out from the doctor how many more slides you have, sir.
Oh, I'm almost done, but okay. We can go.
Not rushing you, but I want to make sure we get to some of these questions.
No, I wanted to get here because I know that we are looking for tools for improving.
Yeah, we've been talking about the problem and we're all ready to fix it.
Yes, and I just want to give you a quick glance in the probiotics. Actually, Microbiome Labs, the Megaspore Biotic, has a lot of purpose in terms of the oral health. So working in the gut is a very good idea if you want to have a healthy mouth. We don't really think about that. And we have different types of microbes in the Megaspore Biotic formulation that they can produce B vitamins, they can produce antioxidants, they can produce vitamin K2, and all these things we already know, we talk about it. they're highly important for having a healthy mouth microbiome. So if you want to have a healthy mouth, you need to work in your gut, period. There's no way around. And also, you want to have, in some cases, a good tool for improving your oral microbiome. And there are certain formulations in the market that you can use. Try to find for these guys. These are the guys who are actually proven in multiple research that has been done that they can improve the status of your mouth microbiome. But it needs to be delivered orally in conjunction to a good gut probiotic. You need to have something that it will be delivered orally to improve the mouth microbiome status. If it's in a capsule and it's going to be absorbed in the digestive tract, might not be the best thing for your oral microbiome. Still, we're in diapers here. We need to work way more in terms of the probiotics for the mouth. But definitely, this is my way to go. Besides, of course, everything else I just mentioned, I think that a good basic routine for improving your gut is essential for the mouth microbiome. I will say also improving your nutritional levels of D3 and K2 is a very good idea. MegaGuard, I put this product because it does help with digestive issues, improve digestion. And there's many other things we can use, but this is something you might want to explore because if you have a healthy digestion, healthy nutrient absorption, you have a good buildup of nutrients in your mouth as well for your healthy microbiome in the mouth. And the enzymatic mouth freshener, I think, is also a really good aid for people who are dealing with certain overproduction of some byproducts that can create malodor and other cosmetic problems. So finally, this is my list. Avoid harsh agents, mouthwashes, avoid over-cleansing, evaluate with the specialist, look. If you have mouth breathing, which I didn't talk about today, but it's a huge also problem for mouth microbiome imbalances, really improve your lifestyle. Try to remove any hazardous material from the mouth in the proper way with a biological dentist, in a biological way. If you have mercury or other metals, probably not the best idea for your mouth. Check up with a biological dentist, and I push on the biological dentist idea because they're more in tune with these type of concepts. And take care of your diet, because whatever you're going to eat, and you're going to feed not only your gut and your gut microbiome, you're going to feed your mouth microbiome as well. And that's all I have to share.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Revolution Gut Health is a way to reach out to you directly. Yes. And thank you so much. Let's go full screen again. Okay, I have 5 minutes to get you to answer a whole bunch of questions, but let me just thank you very much. That was fantastic. Please seriously consider loading up your cart with these dental ideas and products for Microbiome Labs with that 15% off. The coupon code's in the chat, and the link to follow is in the chat. One thing to realize is that everything you talked about with, if you can get your gut more balanced, it's going to help the mouth, invite, you know, the two directions. So if you're not already on Megaspore or experimenting with it very slowly, remember, build up. You can open up the capsule, sprinkle a little and build up. It's a great place to start. That was also the Total Gut Restore kit that he was showing you. And we've had many sessions with Kiran Krishnan on vitamin D3K2, the megaquinone as well that you were showing. Okay, so let me get to some questions for you. This has to be fast, sir. Are the holes in tonsils from one or repeated strep infections, or could there be other causes?
Usually that is created from multiple infections in the tonsils that will create these creeps. And unfortunately, those create a different niche inside your mouth that can harbor and colonize different patterns of bacteria, and not always the good ones, not the ones we want to see. So that can create recurrent infections. There's holistic approach to clean and treat these type of pits and grooves in the tonsils.
Would procaine therapy? Yes. Okay, so that's a neural therapy.
Ozone therapy.
Procaine. Ask your biological dentist about that. When a person's consuming a really good diet, seals the leaky gut, how soon after can the oral microbiome shift favorably? So how long does it take?
We don't know, but I will say quite rapidly because of the direct connection and because these nutrients are pre-digested. So they come in a ready-to-use form. So because we know the resilience of the oral microbiome is quite big, I will speculate that this will happen in a time frame of weeks, not even months. I don't have consistent research done in that area available yet, but I know that the connection is quite rapid because of this enteric circulation pathway and the resilience of the oral microbiome.
What grows under root canals, and do the same pockets of negative bacteria develop underneath the gum lining if someone has an implant and a fake tooth? Well, those would be different, right? Because the root canal is still is dead and still there. And then the implant is biologically neutral, correct?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, actually. I don't know if I can answer that in a small time frame, but mainly just keep in mind, a root canal is a dead tooth. It's a mummified tooth. There's a lot of issues with having the death tissue in your mouth. So again, I don't say that you radically have to remove that, but definitely we know they're highly connected to a lot of systemic illnesses. And there's a lot of research about those. An implant, if it's placed in the proper way, and if it's titanium, you're still gonna have some residual bone and gum loss because it's not highly biocompatible. It's just is moderately biocompatible. The way to go is zirconium. Zirconium is the best material.
Is there any way to get your recessed gum linings if the teeth are not loose yet? Is there any way to get that gum back?
If you if you have the bone lost, it's impossible. Unfortunately, the bone, we don't have effective techniques for regeneration of the bone level, and the gums, they get nourished by the bone. So if you have less bone available, your gums will never be able to grow as much as your bone will allow. And unfortunately, it's limited to that.
Leo saying, I've had two rotten wisdom teeth out and all hell is broken loose. You just had them removed. Okay. I thought things would get better given the infection reduced in my mouth, but I've had fever, swelling, aches, worse neuro symptoms and reactivity. What's going on? Leo, was there mercury by any chance in those teeth? I'm just curious. And were you at a biological dentist? Did they use ozone? Because that does release a lot of bacteria into the mouth. I know that when I got my cavitations taken care of with Dr. Curatola, I asked him, to inject my tonsils with Procaine. I was like, you're in there anyway. Wrong, stupid, bad. I overdid it and had very similar reaction. Doctor, what do you think about that? And Leo, I'm sorry, I don't have the answers to those questions, but have you ever seen that before? And then we have to go, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, wisdom tooth extractions can create other problems if they're not, the whole ligament is not removed properly. That's what we call cavitation. It's a necrotic tissue that remains inside the jawbone that can trigger inflammation and infection locally, but also systemically. So a good way for analyzing that is taking a cone beam and with a person that knows how to assess and evaluate those type of situations and get it treated. You have to do another surgery, but you want to remove that necrotic tissue if it's present.
Also, Leo, I'm wondering, did they give you an antibiotic? You know, a lot of people are given some antibiotics after oral surgery, maybe for a couple of days. All antibiotics aren't bad. They can save your life. You just have to repopulate your microbiome afterwards. So I'm wondering about that. He's saying, no, all the mercury was out. Right. But there's still so much else that can be going on around that tooth. I love you all. Thank you so much. We went a little long today. I apologize for that. Doctor, thank you so much. It was so great to have
my
you
pleasure.
Here. You all could put some love into the chat. Thank you, Deb, for Dr. Margarinos. And we will be sending the replay out tonight. And tell me your website one more time.
It's revolutiongathealth.com.
I mean,
you can
great
find name. Me there. And yeah, my pleasure to help you, everyone, if I can be useful at all. That's my pleasure.
Absolutely. We so appreciate you. And yes, everybody, we will be sending that replay out. Be sure to take advantage of the discounts as well. I don't know how much longer those are going to last. The fact is, we're really grateful for them anytime. And I kind of think right now we're in that zone of where we're not going to have them for much longer, but so grateful for them. Thanks, Clarissa. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Great job.